Hello, welcome to Spotlight on Heritage with me, Rob Watson, and John Coster.
Hello, Rob. Good morning.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for coming to record this today.
Yes, we're in the Coster cave.
Inside my head.
Yes, today.
Scary right. Place.
And we're here today to talk about the Modern Cockney Festival, which you were just saying is in its fourth.
I think so. It's the fourth or fifth iteration. Yeah, it's amazing, really.
And what, I mean, I'm not a Cockney, but so what's it about?
Yeah, well, geezer, let me tell you a jackanory. Let me tell you a story about it. It's interesting, actually, because I was talking to someone that we mutually know, Russell, and he was saying about, oh, you must meet this, my work colleague, Andy. But play nice. I remember he sent us an email and he said, you need to play nice, the pair of you, because like, he's a West Ham fan and all that. But he lives down in Barry in Wales. And we chatted away. And it was just interesting that, you know, Andy had gone through, he's slightly older than me, I think. So he'd gone through his career of, you know, PR and marketing and stuff like that, with that cheeky sort of Cockney East End wide boy attitude of being able to, you know, sell coal to Newcastle and that sort of stuff. And it was just interesting. He was saying about this Modern Cockney Festival that he'd come up with the idea with his colleague, Saf Osmani, who's an East End Bengali, and about, you know, what is Cockney? I think, you know, the Mayor of London had dropped Cockney completely from his website. It was modern, I think it was a modern, was it a multicultural English or something like that, modern cultural English or something like that. I can't remember exact terms to it. And so it wasn't used as Cockney at all. It wasn't defined. And it took out all of that mention of the word Cockney. And so they kind of came up with this idea of, well, what does it, you know, you can be a Bengali Cockney, you can be a Sikh Cockney, you can be a black Cockney, you can be a whatever Cockney. And just what does it mean to be from the East End? And they've gone off and done a lot of reports and, you know, a lot of academic stuff. And this year's festival, which takes place, as usual, between the 1st and the 30th of March, there's lots of online stuff that people can join and webinars and stuff that look amazing. And they've been very successful, you know, and fair play to the guys. And the reason I got involved is I did a Cockney bubble. I remember we did a Cockney bubble at the Also coffee shop last year. And it was just talking about, you know, my name Coster, for example, C-O-S-T-E-R, comes from costermonger, which is someone that pushes a barrow. So everybody's name comes from something. So Coster originally was C-O-S-T-A-R, which is a type of French apple, I think. So it was like John Applehead. So when there was too many Johns, it was then John Longshanks, because you were tall. It was John from the river, John by the wood, you know, John apple-shaped head. So, you know, apples and barrows, which is a very kind of Cockney thing. And it was one of those things that I'd always left behind. You know, I came from the East End of London, but, you know, I left, I went off to the army, went off travelling, did expeditions and stuff. And this year's the 40th anniversary in September of me going off on my first expedition. And it was always somewhere that I was going to leave. And so I'd been from the East End my whole life. And it was only till I met these guys and I listened to someone that was talking about dialects and language and things like that, about how to preserve Cockney, how to keep Cockney alive. And he started talking about it needs to start allying itself, or you need to be thinking about endangered languages around the world and how many languages, you know, die out every week and things like that. And I remember looking at the time, I had the Documentary Media Centre, and I was looking at this collection of books that I've got behind me here that were in, well, they're in this building. And I'm like, well, how can I go online on Zoom to people I've never met in the Philippines and talk to that college, which is like the equivalent of Leicester College in this place, Davio, that have, about UNESCO money they had to take their students up into the mountains to talk to this indigenous tribe about their language and their dialect, and give them some advice about how to do a exhibit from a museum perspective with it, if I'm not interested in Cockney myself. And it was a dawning realisation, like this slap round the face, that maybe I should support these guys as much as I could and look to do something that was about acknowledging where I was from and how that shaped who I was and that kind of opinion. Because, you know, to say to someone that you're an EastEnder, obviously they think of the EastEnders TV show, or, you know, Cockney wide boy, or you're a gangster, you know, with all of these sort of Rise of the Foot Soldier films and stuff. Whereas in fact, it's a lot deeper than that, and it goes a lot deeper than that. And the guys kind of define it as a non-posh Londoner. And I think that's quite broad, actually. I think, you know, if I think to some of my old army mates from Bermondsey, south of the river, come on, John, we're going to go drinking south of the river, walking over Tower Bridge, thinking this is like, you know, going into the middle of nowhere, going into a war zone for me from Stepney, that they probably wouldn't see themselves as a Cockney. I bet they'd be a non-posh Londoner. So I think that, for me, I think is one of the definitions of it. It's just someone from the East End, too.
So one of the things that defines a sense of identity is place. So where is the East End?
So to me, I would always say the East End was from the Tower, Tower of London, Tower Bridge, and it would go through like Aldgate, Stepney, Commercial Road. It would go like Bethnal Green. You'd start going north like Bethnal Green. It'd probably go out somewhere like as far as Bow. And as soon as you got out to like Dagenham and places like that, that was Essex when I was a kid. Whereas I remember teaching at DMU when you got me the job there and talking to one of the students, and I was like, all right, mate, you know, where are you from? And he was like, I'm from the East End of London. I said, where are you from? He was like, Dagenham. I went, Dagenham? Dagenham's not the East End. He's like, it is.
Dagenham's Essex.
Yeah, it is. It's East London. Well, it might now be defined as East London because it's London's East, as opposed to that original, you know, where you from those streets. And I'm from Stepney, so you're E1, you're right in the heart of it.
Well, I mean, I can, my experience is from Liverpool, and one of the things that I kind of moved away from was the kind of chauvinism and the very clear to call yourself, I'd never call myself a Scouser, but you have to be born within the city boundaries in order to be able to justify yourself as a Scouser. You have to be from Liverpool, the physical place, 10 meters outside of that city.
You're not Scouser. You're not. Yeah.
But so many other people kind of, you know, it becomes a kind of amorphous blob. What's wrong with policing that boundary? Because it used to be as well the sound of the bells.
Sound of Bow Bells, yeah.
Bow Bells, yeah. That kind of defined the area. And what's wrong with policing that and saying, if you know, that guy from Dagenham, he's not a Cockney.
You're not a Cockney, mate.
Who gets to decide?
Yeah, and I think what it is, we live in a society that is so divisive now. It's all about pointing out why people shouldn't be something. That what happens is as soon as you point out maybe something that's quite logical, which is if you weren't born in this, you might live in the area and you're an East Ender, and you might identify with Cockney culture, you might like a pearly king or queen, but if you're not from an indigenous person, you know, if you're not second, third, fourth generation, someone who was born in the East End, so, you know, I'm going to talk to you about a couple of people in my family that I've been researching from a military perspective with my army career, you know, they go back to the Stepney and Poplar Rifles, who were then in the, and then World War One, and then World War Two was the London Irish Rifles, and then I was in the Territorials as well with the Royal Green Jackets. So you've got this people from the East End. Now I've got no problem with people saying that they're come from, you know, they're living in the East End and they're, you know, they're new arrivals. I mean, we've got so many people that came. That's why I like Leicester. There's so many people that came when I was a kid. You know, from the Huguenots through to the Jews, Vietnamese boat people, Bengalis, like, you know, Saf and his community. That, yeah, fine. I've got no problem you calling the community, but I'm not caught up in saying you can't call yourself a Cockney. More because I don't want to get into saying to someone, you're not something rather than you are.
So Cockney is more than just the place where you're from?
Yeah, I think it's more of sort of an identity, a feeling that you're proud of where you're from, you're working class. I think definitely being working class. So I understand that non-posh Londoner, but I think it's more about a non-posh person that comes from a certain area. I think it's interesting because I think if we could position...
Because we have to define what posh is as well. What does posh mean?
Yeah, you know, someone who's, you know,
because
wealthy.
Because Hampstead is aristocratic, isn't it? You know, it's Belgrave.
Yep.
Belgravia is elite, but middle-class Londoners, you know, are they posh? Is it? So it's very much particularly working class and the manual labouring working class. Mm. Not the skilled working class.
So, and now if someone, you know, the East Enders who moved out from Stepney and, you know, East Ham and places like that, Bethnal Green, that now live out in sort of, you know, Essex and stuff, that kind of Cockney diaspora, they might talk like a Cockney and maybe still drive a cab and go into London, but they're starting to move into that sort of middle class. They're starting to have the money, the disposable income that means maybe they're not so much working class. They're starting to transition. And this is the thing with class. It's more about what class are you in? You go, well, does it matter? Why are you trying to measure what class I am? It's about division. It's never done from the point of view of trying to make it positive. I think so. That's why I've always tried to avoid saying to someone, oh, if you weren't born within the sound of Bow Bells or you weren't Indigenous, you're not Cockney. And that's what I like about the Cockney Festival, is the fact that it's, if you want to be involved in it, that's fine, that's great. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't learn about people that came from there originally and what you're adding to. I mean, I love the pearly burqa, for example. Somebody's got a burqa on, it's all covered in pearl, and there's a great picture of them sitting there with a pearly queen. And it's, that's great. But it's done from a positive perspective about, we've got a lot to learn and share from each other, rather than just turning out and saying, well, you can't be this because you're not from here. I think that's what causes the issue.
So you're listening to Spotlight on Heritage with me, Rob Watson, and with John Costa, and we are talking about what it is to be a Cockney and how this relates maybe to other badges of identity. What was your experience then in terms of, you're kind of growing up in that area, did you feel a pressure to identify as or escape from? You know, so there was a during the period of the 80s, particularly 80s and 90s, there was like a...
loads of money.
Yeah, and also the flight from that of kind of, I found that too oppressive to stay in Liverpool, that over-identification, because it was a bit self... I felt it was kind of self-recriminating and self-indulgent. And it was like, no, I wanted to move on. And a lot of people did. They moved away from that, but also stop, you know, you stop identifying with it. But that works both ways. How did that kind of, your experience working on markets and, you know, kind of family members and the people that you hung around with and the Sea Scouts that you were part of and everything, how was there a pressure to conform and normalise that, or was it something that you kind of felt you could break free and express yourself with?
I think I always felt I could navigate it by being who I was. I never felt the pressure to conform. I mean, I was very quiet as a child, and I remember when I started to work with my uncle on his market, you know, going through River Rive Tunnel about 6 o'clock on a Saturday morning in the van and going to Deptford High Street. And just the people that you meet there in a market situation, the kind of the mix of people, it made you kind of come out. You couldn't be shy. You had to engage people, especially selling nightdresses. You know, your humour, your cheeky chappy like type stuff, you know. And I think for me, that was a real defining moment. And being in the Sea Scouts, we were sort of in the London docks there, where Canary Wharf is there. That's completely different, mate. I don't recognise that at all, because there was nothing there. And I lived in the Honey High Rise building when I was a kid, Kelson House, which was there now. So you can't see that on the skyline anymore. It's disappeared. And that was all the London Dockland Development Corporation, the 80s, you know, loads of money, the yuppies, you know, Margaret Thatcher's, you know, ways of operating and turning people on each other. And it was very much around, sort of, you know, buying your own castle and all those kind of, you know, classic things from the 80s. And I can remember doing a London Docklands Development Corporation day where we were doing car park duty, and watching this aeroplane come in and land and then take off again, a short takeoff and landing plane. Well, of course, that was a precursor of the city airport. So, you know, money needs to be spent to change areas because there was nothing there. You know, it was wasteland. There was nothing in the dock. So, is what's been done to the Docklands now a good or a bad thing? Well, maybe the people that live there should be the people that decide that. But from my perspective, there was nothing there. It was a playground. We could row up and down. We'd never see anyone for hours. Now it's changed and it's a part of London and it's brought regeneration and stuff. So they're bigger conversations. But I would say the first time I really felt the kind of the division or the pressure, not so much to conform, but sort of, you know, make a decision about who you were, was when it came to careers and stuff, because it was very clear. There was a very clear, you went east and you worked for the post office, Ford at Dagenham's, or you worked for the gas board. You were going to become like manual labour, or you went west, you know, and then you went into the city of London and you become a cheeky chappy city trader, you know, loads of money, braces, you know, barber jacket, carrying an umbrella. And so I mean, I didn't go into that trading side. I went and got an office job, You know, but why I had that office job Monday to Friday, 8 till 4:30, I then started lifeguarding in the evenings. I joined the Territorial Army, and I was away every weekend. So I had this juncture position where I had the money, but I was able to still do. I mean, to this day, I've still not smoked a cigarette because I would never spend money on that because there was always something to buy. So I think for me, and then I could have gone to university, but I chose not to because I just didn't see the value of it to me at that time, because I wanted to travel the world and be in the army and go on expeditions and do all the things that I've done.
University of life.
Yeah, the last 40 years, you know. And so, you know, have I missed out? Well, maybe the way to look at it from if I missed out is if we could go back to my class, you know, in the sixth form, or you know, the low, you know, like the year five, what would that be, year 10 now, wouldn't it? You look at that year there and say, well, everybody who then went off to university after A-levels, which most of my people, my friends did, and a lot left at 16 to go and work in apprenticeships and stuff, is did they do anything with their degree? You know, is it something that, you know, how many of them went off and then stayed in that area? How many of them had better careers because they had a degree? And I can remember the very first time my education stood out to me with my two A-levels in geography and geology was I was sitting next to someone on the first day working at Pearl Assurance in the induction. And the person next to me had their O-levels and I had two A-levels, and I was paid £500 more a year because of that. That was the first time the value of education became clear to me, because I'm thinking, well, who else is here that's probably got a degree? What's the difference? Is it £500 between me and them? You know, that classic sketch with John Cleese and the two Ronnies, well, I look down on him because he's so-and-so. It became very clear. It was almost like a comedy sketch.
So who are your Cockney icons? Who do you look to? You would say that they, without being, there's a few stereotypical people, I think, but who would you say were your, the iconic figures that you look to and you go, right, yeah, they really represent?
I guess the only person that I could probably really think of that, I think of my parents' generation and stuff, is someone like Barbara Windsor, you know, someone who's an actress, kind of, you know, knew the craze, knew that world, was famous, you know. And I think my old man always summed it up quite well. He said, you've got to understand, son, he said, you know, how famous these people were before the internet, you know, like people like Bruce Forsyth and stuff. He's not a Cockney, but I'm saying, like, how big those stars were, you know, Saturday Night, you know, Palladium and all those kind of things. So I think someone like her, that's an interesting one. We were always brought up at school. I mean, our school was like Raine's foundation, so Henry Raine was the founder. But again, so a lot of this stuff was linked to the city and sort of, you know, aldermen and people that had bequeathed money to educate the poor and needy of so-and-so. You know, these schools all grew out of a lot of that stuff. So you got used to that kind of classic East End, that they were benefactors. You know, you were always like working class and you lived in terraced housing and you were there. And I think that for me is what drove my interest in my family's link to conflict with my own military service,
because that kind of 60s and 70s was kind of 50s 60s 70s was kind of people making it big, you know, leaving the cobble streets and the slums behind.
Well, it was always about moving away and making something better of yourself rather than staying. And I think that, you know, for me, it definitely was travelling. You know, my eyes were open to the world by my grandma, you know, my parents as well. So, you know, going off and travelling and seeing the world, which I've done, you know, in my life. And I'm going to be 60 soon. So this whole kind of 40 years since the expedition, which I went on when I was 20. So in those 40 years, what have I done? Well, I've been to 40 countries. You know, so you look about, you know, going off and travelling and bettering yourself and the amount of people that you've met and you know from different places. Whereas I think my interest in heritage, and particularly this conflict memory research, is more about the real value in ordinary people's stories that don't have their story told, particularly like this military research where you find, like, you know, you can get all the books that are written by the officers talking about how, you know, Rodney Bucket went off and was very brave doing that and his men, and then, like, well, three of those people that were killed, one of them was my granddad. Well, I'll never find out about anything about my granddad because he was a rifleman, so therefore he wasn't important. He was just a statistic. And I think that makes you then look at heritage and what you do with the heritage fairs and talking about that. That if you're an alderman of Leicester or a mayor or someone who's, you know, big in business, then you have the time and possibly the money to record your own history and leave it for other people to find. But if you're working class and just getting on with your life, and trying to survive and raise a family and just, you know, just be a good member of society without doing anything that gets you mentioned in the paper through, sort of, you know, petty thievery or winning an award for something or being brave, then, you know, all of these people that are invisible that have built the foundation, the shoulders of the giants that we stand on are not the people whose books that you can go and read and biographies. They're ordinary people from our families that we don't really know about.
And there's a tendency to romanticise, you know, the East End. And actually, there were, you know, my experience growing up in Liverpool is very similar in a sense, is that there's a whole side which is about, you know, kind of people who just, you know, drunks, waste their lives, you know, antisocial, you know, kind of problems, you know, kind of, you know, how to describe people, you know, the people who get dumped into sink estates and it becomes, you know, problem families and all the rest of it. It's like there's a side to it which was kind of how do you navigate there? How do you maintain that you know, positive, you know, people have this it's a projection, it's like, oh, it's a festival, it's a Cockney festival, it's an identity festival, it's good PR, it's good for the tourism industry. And you say, you know, life wasn't like that. Life was tough.
Yeah.
Poverty, inequality, ignorance, all of these things are as important as the story as the kind of pearly kings and queens,
yeah,
and the attractive Instagrammable images.
Yeah, and also I think that kind of, like, you know, plucky Cockney from World War II, you know, during the Blitz, like, you know, here's Mrs. Jones cleaning her doorstep. Oh, Hitler won't bomb us.
What was it, the famous one? I think it was, you know, kind of Churchill visited the East End and said, you know, admire you all, keep up the fighting spirit. Yeah. And somebody shouted out, you don't have to live here.
Yeah. The kind of typical, sort of, you know, tell me the truth, you know, give it how you were. And I think that for me is one of the things that you're fighting against all the time as well, which is, you know, the craze and, you know, the East End and all that sort of stuff. Well, I should imagine the amount of people that the craze knew who worked for the craze, it's a bit like, I always think of that, you know, coming from Liverpool, it's that sort of the 4,000 people that saw the opening night of the Beatles' first gig in the Cavern. Well, it probably held about 40 people, but, you know, the 4,000 people, they all said it was the best thing they'd ever had, you know. So we're suddenly starting to invent connections to things that aren't necessarily true, and until you go out of your way to investigate that and find out about your own family's story, you know, I mean, my dad often said, you know, he said you'd see them driving around, you know, you see their vehicles, their black cars would go past, he said, and you'd know certain people that were there, he said, but if you weren't part of that world, they didn't bother you. He said, this is the thing, they didn't walk around lording it over everybody. He said they just kind of did what they did, and the police did what they did. And he said, if you weren't part of that world, he said, you might see them drive past, but they weren't on your radar. They never bothered you.
So this is Sore Sound Spotlight on Heritage with me, Rob Watson, and John Costa, and we're thinking through what it means to be a Cockney. What do you see of it now? I mean, there's two questions I've got. One is, do you ever get to go back to London and see the area and how much it's changed and what's different? Because the interesting one about Canary Wharf is that they're now introducing accommodation and converting a lot of the blocks into flats. So because they realise that the office space was underutilised, so they've now flipped the business model and they're trying to build schools and health centres and things to attract people to live in
the
area.
We're back to high-rise accommodation, aren't we?
Yeah,
it's interesting.
But the other one is the other side of that. So the place, but also this kind of modern marketing spin, it becomes something in a brochure which is attractive for investors to say there's an identity here, which is, you know, we have a festival once a year and we have stalls and we do some events, and it's like gives everybody a nice feeling, but it's just paper thin.
Yeah, I think these things like, you know, London 2012 Olympics being in the East End, the Olympic Park, you know, Queen Elizabeth Park, isn't it? You know, and events coming from there, and has obviously helped to do regeneration. But it's like, you know, how many of those people locally could afford tickets? You know, so we're back to that sort of great sort of oxymoron when you have conversations about Olympics and how they tell you it's going to regenerate areas and make things better and the legacy of it, and then it doesn't never really quite seem to happen. But why do we believe it in the first place? And I think for me, you know, I'd like to go back. I'm planning to go back hopefully some point in the summer. Like I said, I'm going to turn 60, so it seems a good time to go back and, you know, take my two boys if they want to go. My grandson's interested in going because he loves going to London. He goes up and after a couple of trips on the London Underground, he was a Londoner. You know, he could quite easily live there, and we will probably lose him at some point when he leaves college or does uni or whatever and goes off to live in London. So it'd be nice to go back and see some of those places. But I think it's like anything, isn't it? You have to go back. I mean, a mate of mine that was in the army with Brian Lilly, I'd message him a couple of weeks ago, actually, because he put something up about his dad. It was a plaque on the wall of the end of these houses, and his dad was Councillor Lilly. And I remember meeting him a couple of times, and he was like sunbaked. And he'd been a docker. And in 1938, he went off to, I think it was Alexandra or something like that, to become a docker, work there, and got called up for the beginning of World War II in September 39, and never came home till like 1946. So his old man literally been, he looked like a baked brownie. I can remember clearly meeting him the first time. I was like, this man's been put in the oven. And we were just talking about, I said to him, you know, meeting your old man, how nice he was. And he said, well, you're like him, John, you just help people, you know. Well, I'd never really thought of it from that perspective. And then Brian sent a picture of the house that we lived in the other day. I think it was on Monday, it came through Monday night. He sent a picture. He'd obviously gone back there and was looking around, and Stifford House, where I kind of spent from sort of 6 to 18 and going off and travelling around. And, you know, there's memories and connections to places, and you have to kind of walk around. And I walk to school and all those sorts of things. But it'd just be nice to go back and see how much of it is still the same, but how much has it changed, and how many people have lived there over that 40, 50, 60 years, and how places changed. And if we don't find out about people and connections and where people lived and, you know, our family and coming from that point of view, it will always be left to someone to either define it from a residential estate agency, it's wonderful to live here, kind of, because it's got a community. Well, what the hell's that? You know, it's got a great community because it's got a library or whatever. Or it gets left to organisations that are doing sort of tourism, you know, come and visit the East End because of the Olympic Park. Well, what about everything else? Are you going to a museum that's in the Docklands about how many boats there used to be? I mean, I remember my uncle saying when he worked in the docks that, you know, you could walk across the boats. That's how many boats there were. You could walk across the boats, across the whole thing. Now, I've been there where there's no boats, and you forget about, you know, you'll see a picture where there's like the end of a terrace street and there's a wall and there's a massive great big ship at the end.
Yeah. I think that experience of deindustrialisation is under-considered, under-thought through.
And that's affected, obviously, lots of places like, you know, Newcastle. Yeah. And,
I mean, Liverpool, mm-hmm. particularly the docks area, but Manchester with the docks in Manchester, it's Canary Wharf, not Canary Wharf, Salford Quays now. I was going to ask you about the people who now, who no longer live in the East End, haven't lived there for years, but want it to kind of be preserved and stay the same, although there was an enormous amount of damage in the Second World War, and it was rebuilt. You know, the rebuilding that took place was, you know, there's a sense that people have a view or an opinion about it is, but they've not lived there for 30 years. I've not lived in Liverpool for 30 years. You know, why should I be concerned about any of the things that change? You know, that,
yeah, that nostalgic view of it, of how it used to be, rather than accepting the fact that it has to evolve and move on. And I think that's important, that you have a memory about it. But rather than saying, oh, everything's changed, why don't you turn around and say, well, this is what it was like? Because there's not enough people saying, this is my memory of this place. There's too many people commenting about how a place is now, and it always comes out as being negative. Well, of course, everything changes. Nothing's ever going to stay the same. It's like going out in your garden and saying, look at all these new plants. Well, it's different from last year, so it's bad. You know, and you see a lot of that with like comments on, you know, Leicester past and present and all this sort of stuff. Someone will put a picture up of a nostalgic view of the city with buses around the clock tower and we go, oh, Leicester's changed, it's show or whatever, you know, it's not like it used to be. And you go, well, yeah, but why aren't you commenting about what your memories are of that time then and what was different about it? Because if you can describe to me your childhood in that space, yeah, and then we look at it today, then you can turn around and say, well, it's obviously changed. you might not like it because it's changed, but what about it that's changed has been lost from society, not because someone else has come from somewhere else and changed it? What have we lost as a community? So when you then travel and you go to somewhere like Nigeria or you know in India, as I came back from recently, and you see how everybody's like, you know, supportive, they've got community elements, and that's not being nostalgic. That's saying, well, there's support mechanisms here that aren't based on the state. There's people helping each other through family connections. If the fact that this has changed because you no longer live there and you've moved away, you're blaming other people for changing the space. Well, if you're not there to have an impact on it, how can you just blame these people? Share your memory. And these people probably turn around and go, actually, yeah, we should bring that back. Actually, that was quite cool. Maybe we should get rid of the pedestrianisation, keep some bus lanes, but actually put the buses in. Was it that movement, the ability to get into the city centre with a bus stop, that gave it much more vibrancy rather than just expecting people to walk around? We always go at it from the negative perspective. We never come at it from, well, tell me what you liked about it and how it was. Let's preserve that and then have a bigger societal conversation about, well, maybe we've lost what a sense of community is, rather than turn around and say, that street's got a great community. Well, what is that? Well, we have a Evington in Bloom, for example. You know, there'll be people that will buy houses in Evington because they'll see Helen's fantastic Evington Echo magazine. It's got an Evington Friends of Evington group. It's got an Evington in Bloom and it wins awards all the year. Then someone go, well, I'm going to buy my house. It must have a great community. Well, yeah, but what is that community?
So we are in the last leg of our conversation. This is Rob Watson on Spotlights on Heritage with John Costa. And we're talking about Cockney identity and what the lessons are, I suppose. And you were just talking then about the kind of the sense of community. Are there any lessons that you think we can apply or we can start to consider about the work that we need to do to build a sense of cohesive? It's a hot topic at the moment. There's a lot that divides us and a lot of public policy around a multicultural society focuses on separate and segregated identities, and the danger is that that leads to a fragmentation. What are the lessons in terms of, because identity is something that you participate in, that you live, not necessarily something that you have as a badge or a costume you can adopt. What do you think the lessons are from the kind of the experience of the East End Cockney view of the world that we might be able to share?
Well, I think it's about coming at it from the perspective of some characters. I mean, I know Leicester focuses on sort of, you know, Roman Richards and all that kind of stuff and winning the football, and it always seems to need something in order to...
Isn't that Romans, Richards and relegation?
And relegation, yeah, absolutely, the three answers. And that's controversial. Leicester needs to have something to hook itself onto. It can't just be what's good about Leicester. It's all about things that we've done or people, you know. It's always like famous people. Well, what about people from Leicester, you know? And so then you go, oh yeah, you know, the singers or, you know, poets or different people, you know, the Walk of Fame. And you go, well, no, I'm not talking about people like that. I'm just talking about, what does it mean to come from Leicester? So to come from the East End, it means that you don't have to join everything. It just means that it's there. There's an opportunity for you to do it. Because if you don't celebrate those things, if you don't have those conversations, if you don't fight to keep a particular identity alive, it's not about saying that it's better than another identity. It's just saying, well, where is that? Has it gone? Has it been lost? What was lost? Why can people think that Cockneys were cheeky and, you know, chirpy and all that sort of chirpy Cockney? If that's a good thing, you know, because they're always like, you know, up in the Blitz, you know, very positive spirit, and, you know, Hitler won't get us down and blah blah blah, you know, kind of typical sort of, you know, Mr. Chumney Warner talking from the BBC, look at this chippy Cockney, he's still carrying on with his life, you know. Then if we don't talk about that, what is that? Has that been lost? Well, that way of talking might be lost, but, you know, you hear anybody in any of the events that they run that are a sort of a Bengali Cockney or a Sikh Cockney or, you know, a Pakistani Cockney or whatever, they'll all talk more East End than I do. You know, they'll be more geezery than I am. It's just they just don't look like you. So then it's about, well, if people can participate in that, what's wrong with that? It automatically gets done as a negative thing.
But there's an interesting dynamic, which is kind of the list that you then just gave was, you know, a Bengali Cockney, not a Cockney Bengali.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's which comes first. At what point, and we just kind of both gave each other a glance when we quipped cracked a joke about Leicester City's prospects of relegation.
Yeah.
At what point do you get to comment? Well, I've lived in Leicester for 30 years. Mm. I'm an immigrant to the city. At what point is it okay for me to comment and to be part of the dialogue? Most people say, well, you're not from Leicester. Why are you commenting about our football team? There's those kind of alliances that you kind of have, those natural, how thin do they get stretched? At what point do you say, you know, I'm Indian British or British Indian,
yeah.
How, you know, Cockney Bengali or Cockney Punjabi, whatever it is, it's how does that get, you know, kind of what comes first?
I guess that's a question that we don't ask enough, and there certainly are not the safe spaces to have those kind of conversations, because it's automatically about division and being seen as being antagonistic by asking that question. Why are you asking that question? Oh, that's deliberately, oh, you're taking it down the race route, or you're taking it down the identity route. And you go, well, we're already down that route. Have you not looked at the Facebook comments on that? You know, we're already down. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that all of those comments are grounded in racism, yeah, but a lot of those comments are grounded in the other has made a difference. And you go, well, but if you don't live in Leicester and you're from Leicester and you don't live in Leicester now, you can have a comment about it, but you can't come at it from the point of view of discerning, oh, Leicester's not what it was because of these people. Well, Leicester's not because of what it, is not because of what it was because of the car, because of bikes, because of the mayor, because of funding, because of, you know, being Labour City in the middle of a blue donut of a Tory a local authority out in the county. It's a victim of becoming a city and being a separate authority, when, you know, it's a victim of finding King Richard and then getting into arguments about people coming and saying, well, your cathedral's not very big. Yeah, but we needed a cathedral to bury the king. So all of these things, we always blame individuals, but it's very rarely the person in the street that you turn around and go, well, it must be their fault because they're from somewhere else. Look what they've done to Leicester. But, you know, they didn't throw all the litter. They didn't make all of the transport decisions. They didn't make all... It's... We give people too much opportunity to blame other people. We don't give people opportunities like through a citizens parliament, or, you know, even a body that represents people that are English. You know, when you think about it, there's a Welsh Assembly, a Scottish Parliament, a Northern Ireland Assembly, and then the national government in London. Well, London might as well just be a different world when it comes to, it might as well be Monte Carlo or the Vatican or somewhere, or Dubai. You know, so, you know, here in Leicester, I've got more in common with someone probably who lives north of Newcastle and down in Devon than I have with someone who lives in London. You know, I've got more experience, you know, more in common with them from how things impact me when it comes to money. Of course, we're leaving the EU, suddenly we've not got EU money for road projects and all that sort of stuff. So suddenly, was Brexit a good idea if we've not got that money anymore? We allow other people to dictate what we talk about and what's important. We don't provide opportunities for people to turn around and say, well, actually, let's have a citizens' parliament about this. Do you feel represented as a white, indigenous English person? But also, do you feel represented as anyone that's come from any of the new arrival communities in the last 50 years, you know, all that post-colonial stuff? Anyone, you know, if they've got a British passport and they're here, but they identify as English, you go, well, you live here as well. What are you contributing? What are you doing? If you're just trying to create home, then you're not helping me to help other people to understand where you're from.